It's Monday, January 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Saudi Arabia finds regional support amid its latest dispute with Iran. President Obama prepares for his final State of the Union speech.
We're trying to provide services that are sustainable for survivors. You get livelihood skills, support them through education, and so to empower them.
Sierra Leone grapples with lingering effects of Ebola. Also ahead, a famous member of the Jackson singing family is recovering. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Arab League foreign ministers expressed solidarity with Saudi Arabia during a meeting Sunday in Cairo to discuss the recent attacks on its diplomatic missions in Iran. Eight Arab countries have downgraded diplomatic ties with Iran over the attacks that followed Saudi Arabia's execution of a Shiite cleric. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
The gathering of Arab foreign ministers and diplomats applauded as the United Arab Emirates Foreign Minister Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed blasted Iran.
Iran تدخل في شؤون الداخلية للدول العربية عبر إطلاق التهديدات ودعم الجماعات المتشددة.
He claims that Iran uses sectarianism as a tool to impose its hegemony over the region and to meddle in the internal affairs of Arab states. He alleged that it supports extremist groups, trains and arms terrorists, and creates militias to spread chaos and violence and destabilize the area. Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Jubeir accused Iran of recruiting agents inside Arab countries to use against their governments and urged it to stop interfering in internal affairs of neighbors. He claims Saudi Arabia does not want a Sunni-Shiite conflict, but that Iran began sowing religious divisions after its 1979 revolution, while Saudi Arabia opposes the practice. Iranian demonstrators attacked the Saudi embassy in Tehran, setting part of it ablaze after Saudi Arabia executed a top Saudi Shiite religious leader, Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani last week called the attack on the Saudi embassy wrong and against the law. But he said Saudi Arabia cannot use severing diplomatic ties with Iran to hide its crime of executing Nimr al-Nimr, who was critical of the Riyadh kingdom. Arab League head Nabil al-Arabi urged Iran to reduce tensions with its neighbors by taking firm action. He says it impinges on Iran to take concrete steps to prove its stated desire to improve ties with its Arab neighbors and allay their fears of meddling in their internal affairs. American University of Beirut political science professor Hilal Kashan tells VOA it is unlikely the Arab League meeting will result in any concrete action.
The Saudis simply wanted a statement of solidarity, and they got it. They didn't really ask for more or expect more.
Kashan adds Iran has repeated that it is not interested in escalation with Saudi Arabia, and it suspended a number of police officials in Tehran over the Saudi embassy attack. Eight Arab states have either cut or downgraded diplomatic ties with Iran. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
It's time for our social media segment. International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins me right here in the studio to tell us why people are talking about North Korean leader Kim Jong-un yet again. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
We've been talking about him a lot. Mm-hmm. What's it about this time around?
Well, it's been a pretty busy week for Kim, testing nuclear weapons, whether it's hydrogen bomb or not, celebrating his birthday Friday, and also leading a state funeral for one of his top aides. But I'm sure even he didn't expect to hear praise from an American presidential candidate. And of course, it had to be an equally enigmatic figure, Donald Trump.
Of course. What did he say exactly?
Well, Trump is now headed to Nevada for another rally. But when he was in Iowa this weekend, he said, "You gotta give him credit." Credit for what, you may ask? And here's what he said. If you look at North Korea, this guy, I mean, he's a maniac, okay? And you have to give him credit. How many young guys, he was like 26 or 25 when his father died, take over these tough generals? He went on to add, it's incredible. He wiped out the uncle, he wiped out this one, that one. I mean, this guy doesn't play games. So that remark is about Kim purging some high-level officials, including his family members, since taking office.
So what are people saying about this?
ABC News shared a clip of Trump making these remarks on its Facebook page, and maybe not surprisingly, most of the comments were quite negative. Here's a comment that got the most number of likes. Wow, gives credit to a dictator, while calling our president a dictator. The GOP has officially lost its marbles. Another comment reads like this. How long before Trump gives credit to ISIL for the good work their leaders are doing? Jim, I had to dig a bit deeper to find a supportive comment, and here's one. You liberals have really dug up something controversial here. Wow. There was no praise. Listen to the whole speech, not just a sentence.
Is he saying anything about this on Twitter?
Not at all. His tweets on Sunday include thanking people in Iowa for the great turnout at his rallies and telling his supporters to check out the latest Time magazine because he's on the cover. I also want to add that his Republican rivals, including Marco Rubio, Ben Carson, and Carly Fiorina, haven't commented about it yet. Jim?
Wow, could it be politicians are speechless? I doubt that. But thank you for the wrap-up, G. You can follow her on Twitter, at G. Abby Lee. And you can also follow me and our program at VOA Stevenson and at VOA underscore IE. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Republican Party presidential candidates Donald Trump and Ted Cruz are in a virtual dead heat in Iowa, while Democrats Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are also locked in a close race there, according to a new NBC News Wall Street Journal Marist poll. Clinton and Sanders are also within the margin of error in New Hampshire, while Trump has built a 16-point lead in that state. Iowa holds its caucuses February 1st, while the New Hampshire primary is set for February 9th. President Obama, meanwhile, is looking toward his final State of the Union speech before a joint session of Congress. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman is here to discuss more on this very interesting annual gathering.
We have what could be Congress's version of the prom. It happens every year. Members of Congress get all dressed up. They invite their spouses or sometimes a political guest. Mm-hmm. And the president gives a speech. And this is President Obama's final State of the Union address. We don't know exactly what he will say. In fact, he may surprise us. Mm-hmm. But certain things are probably a good bet. He's likely to mention what he thinks are the prime accomplishments of his administration. And he's likely to try to chart a path forward in an election year.
I suspect that topics of the Middle East and gun control may come up.
Indeed. Members of both parties want to know exactly what the plan is to defeat Islamic State. There's also a growing chorus of legislators of both parties who want to know exactly how the implementation of the Iran nuclear deal is going to go forward, given some of Iran's recent actions. On gun control, I'm going to make a bold prediction, Jim. There is not a single Republican lawmaker who will change his or her standing on gun control based on what the president says.
I think you're absolutely right on that.
And I would extend that to any comments that the president may have on immigration. But on these big global affairs, matters that pertain to national security, I think that there's a real hunger when it comes to learning more about how the United States is going to confront Islamic State and this Iran nuclear deal. And one other thing, we have before Congress the text of a major trade deal, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
It is true, though, all politics is local. And as we remember the famous line that Bill Clinton told the first President Bush, it's about the economy, stupid. And the economy has been something that President Obama has been rather not proud of, but at least he says things have been moving in a steady direction. And then, bam, 2016 hits, and Wall Street has had its worst start to a year ever.
If you look at the Obama presidency, the economy has either been stagnant, as it was for the first year or two, or it's been limping along at a very lethargic pace. And if that is your frame of reference, then you would say that President Obama's economic performance has been lackluster. However, if you look at what the economy turned in the year before President Obama entered the White House, when the United States was indeed losing close to a million jobs a month, when economic growth was in negative territory, when essentially the financial markets and the economy as a whole had suffered something akin to a stroke or a major heart attack, then all of a sudden President Obama's economic record looks a little better. Mm-hmm. I would expect Republicans in their response to focus on what we have seen during the administration and to make scant, if any, mention of what preceded it. The Republican response will be delivered by South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, who is a rising star in Republican politics. She is Indian American. She's the youngest governor in the nation. There's a lot of buzz surrounding her as a possible vice presidential pick by the eventual Republican presidential nominee.
Well, the politics surrounding State of the Union is always interesting and fun to watch. And the state of the Senate is held in the hands of our correspondent, Michael Bowman. Well, that's
for better or worse.
For better or worse. That's a pretty big statement. But, Michael, thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to speaking again after the speech.
My pleasure, Jim.
Sierra Leone has been Ebola-free now for 2 months, and while things are moving forward in some ways, many Ebola survivors say that they're not getting enough help to rebuild their lives. Nina DeVries reports for VOA from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Why people are treating us like that?
Ebola survivors are discussing their frustrations at the Sierra Leone Association of Ebola Survivors in Freetown, the country's capital. Each survivor was entitled to a discharge package after recovery. This includes a bag of rice, a foam mattress, and some cash equal to about $70. However, some say they are still waiting for that package. Others say it came very late. Massa Stevens is a nurse who caught Ebola from a patient while working in a treatment center. She says she didn't get her discharge package until 10 months after her release. Stevens says she managed because her husband could help out, but not all survivors have that luxury.
They have lost their parents. They don't have mother, father.
The Ministry of Social Welfare and Gender and Children's Affairs is responsible for the packages. Tina Davies is the lead for Ebola survivor activities within the ministry. She admits some packages were delayed. This was because Ebola treatment units did not inform the ministry fast enough that survivors had been discharged, she says. Davies says most survivors now have received their packages. Still, Ebola survivors like Yusuf Karoma say the discharge package was not nearly enough compensation for what he went through.
You cannot expect for that person to use that money till the next year. The family is vulnerable. Like, I will not eat that bag of rice alone. I'll have to share.
More help is needed, say survivors, and fast. Davies says more help is coming through a specific program for Ebola survivors. Now that the country is Ebola-free, she says the ministry can focus more on issues of survivors. The government is looking at a long-term program for survivors that gives them scholarships, skills training, and startup kits for businesses. Davies adds that survivors can currently access treatment clinics for health issues, and she says that assisted medical treatment will continue.
Survivors have been psychological first aid training. Survivors have their packages. So it's not like nothing is happening. But I think it's the cultural aspect that people want that cash in their hands. But we're trying to provide services that are sustainable for survivors. You get livelihood skills, support them through education, and so to empower them.
Davy says she can understand the frustration that arises when things are not moving as quickly as survivors would like, but she insists that Ebola survivors are a priority for Sierra Leone and that they will not be forgotten. Nina DeVries for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
There. This is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. Legendary Mexican drug trafficker Joaquin El Chapo Guzman is again behind bars in Mexico. The Mexican Marines, who were acting on a tip, raided a home in Los Mochis just before dawn Friday. Mexican federal authorities had been focusing their manhunt since October on a mountainous region of Sinaloa in northwestern Mexico. Months before his capture, U.S. actor Sean Penn met with Guzman for a secret clandestine interview, which was posted on Rolling Stone magazine's website late Saturday. There, Guzman proudly volunteers to Penn, "I supply more heroin, methamphetamine, cocaine, and marijuana than anyone else in the world. I have a fleet of submarines, airplanes, trucks, and boats." Penn described him as entirely unapologetic. Guzman's July 11th prison escape last year from a maximum security prison, that was his second in the past 14 years, was accomplished through a 1.5-kilometer underground tunnel dug in secret from his cell to a nearby village. His escape was a point of friction between Mexico and the United States, which had requested his extradition. Well, many years ago, Janet Jackson emerged from the giant musical shadow of her brothers, including Michael, to become an outright solo singing star and performer on her own. She's been out of the spotlight a bit until recently, but there's been a setback, as VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins us to explain. One.
On Wednesday, Janet Jackson went on Twitter to post that the rumors that she was battling cancer were untrue. She posted a two-minute clip from a song of hers called The Great Forever, along with a message saying that she is not battling throat cancer. Previously, a story came up in a website called Radar Online. The quoted sources as saying that she had throat cancer. Janet says she is recovering. She doesn't say what she's recovering from. She says her doctors have approved her concerts as scheduled for Europe. The tour will be picking up on March 30th in Birmingham, England. It will move into North America in May. And right now, the final date is June 29th in Salt Lake City. Last October, Janet dropped her Unbreakable album. This was her first studio set since 2008. And the tour was humming along pretty well until she had to cancel it. It made Polestar's list of the top 20 international tours. Janet has a very devoted international following. They've been with her for years. The problem was, following her wardrobe malfunction in the Super Bowl of 2004, that audience failed to grow, and she had a few records that underperformed. A few years ago, she married an extremely wealthy Middle Eastern businessman. She's no longer based in the United States. So Unbreakable was seen as a big comeback for her. So whatever this is, it really threw a wrench in the works. And, of course, we all wish Janet Jackson a smooth recovery from whatever procedure she had to undergo.
We have heard through the years of other artists going through this. And let's face it, Janet Jackson is getting older like the rest of us. And, you know, things change over time. And it's tough when you're Your primary occupation is singing. It's difficult to maintain that as you get older for some artists.
Well, absolutely. Janet Jackson will be 50 years old in May. My guess is it's probably vocal cord nodules. Mm-hmm. So many artists have had surgery on their vocal cords. Adele, Meghan Trainor, Steve Tyler of Aerosmith, Sam Smith, the list goes on and on. And they have to undergo a period of healing and recuperation. But after that, they're generally fine. But the good news is that she does not have cancer.
That is very good news.
This was a very large-scale international tour. I think she may have bitten off a little more than she could chew, perhaps. Maybe it did strain her voice. And that's why she had to undergo this procedure.
Well, we wish Janet Jackson all the best, and for her fans. And if perhaps you're not a fan, maybe now's a great time to become one and check out some of her recordings. She has put out a whole wealth of great material through the years.
That's right. Janet's had a 30-year solo career now.
Well, another great career still in progress is Ray McDonald, our top 20 countdown guy. So listen to him each week. You can follow him on Twitter as well. Ray, you're
Ray
at
on the hits.
There you go. Thanks so much for joining us.
You got it, Jim.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com, and on Twitter. Follow us at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, and our engineer is Daryl Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
New technological advances in the demining process is saving lives. One organization on the forefront of such innovation is the Golden West Humanitarian Foundation, which recently won the 2016 CES Innovation Award with its Advanced Ordnance Training Material Project. This project uses advanced three-dimensional printing technology to create models of landmines and military ordnance to train demining technicians in post-conflict countries worldwide. With support from the Office of Weapons Removal and Abatement in the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs, Golden West Humanitarian Foundation has worked to make the environment safer in heavily mine-impacted countries since 1998. From recycling unexploded ordnance in Cambodia to teaching children about the risks of unexploded ordnance, Golden West takes a comprehensive approach to safeguarding the lives and livelihoods of people living in areas contaminated with explosive remnants of war. The United States is the world's largest single financial supporter of efforts to clear unexploded ordnance and landmines. The United States has contributed more than $2.5 billion since 1993 to over 90 countries around the world through more than 60 partner organizations like Golden West Humanitarian Foundation to reduce the harmful effects of illicitly proliferated and indiscriminately used conventional weapons of war. Just 15 years ago, landmines and other explosive remnants of war killed or injured nearly 10,000 men, women, and children every year, more than 25 every day. Thanks to the concerted efforts of the United States, partner nations, international non-governmental organizations, and new technology provided by organizations like Golden West Humanitarian Foundation, that figure, which has now dropped by more than 60%, will continue to go down.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
from